Radio. The transmission and reception of electromagnetic waves on radio frequency, especially those carrying sound messages, or the activity or industry of broadcasting sound programs to the public. Fanboy. A male fan, especially one who behaves in an obsessive or overexcited way.
This is the Radio Fanboy Podcast, and here's your host, Bevo.
Today's guest is based in regional Victoria, but, you know, he's had a pretty impressive career being in stations in Sydney, Perth, Melbourne, Gippsland, and now Warragul is his home. Let's welcome Orion to the podcast. Orion, how are you, mate? You well?
Bevo, mate, how are you? It's great to talk to you finally. I feel like I've been trying to do this for ages.
Yes, it seems to be the way when it comes to tying people down and finding times to make things happen. 3GG, been your home for how many years now?
Oh, my goodness. I started in Gippsland in 2010 at what was then called Star FM, which then became Hit, which is now called Triple M Gippsland. So I started with SCA in 2010. In fact, actually, back then, it hadn't been bought by Austereo, so it was still, you know, your Southern Cross. And then I took some time off for studying and stuff, and I've been a double G, honestly, on and off in different roles since probably 2013, though after I left Gippsland and I did some study, I worked weekends and casuals at ARN in Melbourne. So I kind of didn't go back to Double G properly until kind of 2013. But I really haven't been off the air in Gippsland one way or another since 2010. So it's been a while in Gippsland on the radio, like over a decade.
Is Gippsland where you grew up?
I was born in Wollongong, obviously the coast down south from Sydney, and kind of grew up primary school years in the Southern Highlands and New South Wales. So, you know, Mittagong and Barrel and Mossvale and that kind of stuff. And then we moved to Melbourne when I was a teenager. So really my radio didn't start until Victoria. So pretty much as a teenager, I got into community radio, which I can only assume young up and coming radio people aren't, you know, too good for community radio. I can only assume they're like me. I was kind of obsessively excited about being on the air whenever I could. So, I mean, community radio was really the start for me as a teenager. When I say a teenager, I mean, I think I started my own station when I was probably, I don't know, 13 or something, and I was part of the Hits FM team in Melbourne, and I worked on other community stations. Really, any station that would let me be on the radio, I pretty much was on the radio on community radio, because I just wanted to be on the radio, and it was never about music for me. It was like for example, for you, you know, you do some amazing DJ stuff. You know, music's a big part of who you are. Where for me, I couldn't really care less about music. It was about getting on the radio, communicating, entertaining, talking, engaging, shocking, you know, whatever the day was, that was really my thing.
Hits FM, that was quite an iconic station in Melbourne. There was a lot of famous people that went on to do bigger and better things for there. I think James Ash, I think his name was, yes, the Rogue Traders guy.
Oh, look, 100%. And what's really funny is they did a TV show on the ABC, I based it on that. I can't remember what it was called, Something in the Air, I think. And it was an ABC show they did a while back about a radio station. And what's funny was they actually, because of my history, I was working at 3NE and Edge FM in Wangaratta at the time. The producers drove up from Melbourne and interviewed me and followed me around for a couple of days. I'm like, what, why? And they ended up, you know, they asked me and everything and hung out with me. And then they ended up being a character. Now, obviously, my name's not Ryan. The character was called Ryan, not Orion. You watch it. Something that I did for a lot of my radio career, which people that know would know, is I'd always wear a hat backwards. Now, that wasn't to look cool. That was because I used to wear lots of hats, caps, but then I didn't want the microphone and me sounding crap, so I'd turn it around when I was on the air. Kind of like Sylvester Stallone in that movie Over the Top. He'd turn his hat around and he'd beat everyone in arm wrestling. is that just me, or is it a classic?
Well, you're giving me a great visual here, because I can imagine if you look down to read something off the paper, you're banging your head on the microphone with the brim of your hat.
Yeah, so I turn my hat around and I become the Australian Howard Stern. Anyway, so basically the character wore his hat backwards in every scene. He was called Ryan. And to make it even more funny, which was just classic me, in one of the episodes, he actually said one of his heroes was Ugly Phil, which is what all I was obsessed about back then. I'm like, seriously, do I get money for this? Like, what happened here? Anyway, I could have played this role. Seriously. So, yeah, that history in community radio in Melbourne back then, which really was, it was kind of the glory days back then. There was KISS, which was a community station. I worked for them as well. And there was, what else was there? There were so many dance and pop stations for kids. Because back then, you got to remember, even Fox FM was playing classic rock.
Yes.
Triple M was playing pop.
Yes.
So it was so mixed up and so messy that for us youngins back then, back when I was young in the 40s, it was, I mean, seriously, it was the place to be. So it was crazy. We're up in a big tower on St Kilda Road. I don't know how we got the big tower in St Kilda Road. And it was just bizarre. It was just a bizarre, you'd go in the studio to do a shift. It'd be like walking into a frat house or a uni party 24/7.
Wow.
It was just bizarre. And I remember when when I was doing shifts on Hits, the community station, Phil and Jackie used to call me from their car driving home from doing their shift, which was the Hot 30 on the Fox. They would call me through on the comp line to talk to me and say, hey, good job. Because I used to hang out with them as well. When I mean hang out, I mean Phil certainly Phil was so nice to me. He let me come in whenever I wanted and sitting with him. So a lot of the shows, early days, local, not networked Hot 30 at the Fox, I was in the studio helping Jackie with the calls, the phones. If she was sick or couldn't come in, I would do all the phones. I remember he used to call Jeff Ellis during the songs and get me to read the weather to him just to kind of piss him off. It was very funny. So it was a great time.
So was this in Melbourne, was it? I always thought that their show came out of Sydney, but this is something I've learnt right now.
What happened was the original kind of Hot 30 with Phil and Jackie, I know it launched in on the Gold Coast, and I believe it went to Adelaide.
Yeah.
And then once it kind of made its move, as in, holy crap, this show was amazing, I'm pretty sure then Jeff Ellis said, right, let's bring it to Melbourne. It was absolutely a local show for quite a long time, actually. And I think by the time, because Phil was helping me get air checks and stuff together, and they were horrible. I mean, they were horrible. I don't know how I got a job. Anyway, he was helping me get air checks. And it wasn't until probably my third job in radio, because I started in Charleville and, you know, actually it was my second job. Then I went to Young in New South Wales. And that's when it started going national, because when I worked in Young, I would drive up a hill in Young. There's a really, really big street that's on a hill in Young. And I would listen to him I'd pick up Canberra radio in Young, New South Wales, to listen to Phil at night. So I'd kind of be this weird dude sitting in his car listening to Canberra radio in Young, New South Wales. And it was just amazing to listen to that show, because it evolved so much from when I was, you know, part of it when it was just a local Melbourne show. And it was a juggernaut in Melbourne. It was, you can't even believe how big that show became, because before him, there was some great talent, Rob Elliott, James O'Neill, these people that did countdowns before him. But there was just something about, you know, how Phil did it that just captured the imagination. And from my point of view, I still think Phil could be on any format right now, today, and still connect.
Well, considering now he's on a classic hits format,
exactly.
Isn't
it? But Phil's a radio genius. It doesn't mean as humans we're all not flawed, but with regards to radio, the man's a genius. He's a hero of mine. We still talk. He's still generous. But it doesn't matter what format. That's the thing about radio. You shouldn't have to be 20 to be on Today FM or the Fox, right? You could be 50. Seriously, I'm not joking. Barry Bissell, right? If you can communicate to the audience that you're targeting, age has nothing to do with it. And I think that's a big issue for me. A big issue I have with the industry. They kind of, it's a bit like football. They kind of try to get the right plays in the right positions, and that's not how it's supposed to work. It's about communicating. It's about engaging. It's about, you know, reaching people. But anyway, we were talking about,
I was just going to chime in there and say you're exactly right with Kyle. Like, he's on a younger station being Kiss, and look at him go. He's still going. He's still connecting with the younger audience.
And I remember when I was at Today FM, I was in Albury, and I went from Albury to Today FM, which at 21, it was ridiculous. I was 20 and I moved from Albury, where I was called the new guy for 2 years. And Dan Bradley, God love him. Dan Bradley, who, by the way, he's still like such a nice guy to me, such a great supporter. I talk to him on the phone now and then. He's at Triple M in Melbourne now. He's just a great guy and he's always really supportive. But he decided, the new guy thing would be cool. But they also did it to the guy in Townsville.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember that? So the guy in Townsville who was networked across, I guess, Queensland, this was back then when we were called DMG, the radio network, and the Daily Mail Group or whatever it was. He was the new guy and I was the new guy. At one point, I think I called him on the air and he put me live to air and I put him live to air and we talked to each other like we were the same person because it's just the strangest thing. So, yeah, I went from Albury to Sydney and this is where I actually got to, hang out with Kyle. So you had the whole Kyle entourage. So you had Jason Hawkins, who was known as Lab Rat back then.
Yes.
Now he's Jace with Jason PJ. So he was there. Kyle was there. I forget her name, but Mama Juggs was there. And there were all these new people that kind of formed the Kyle and Jackie O show. So when I was at Today FM, I was there to see Phil have his last shows and, Bert Newton called in and he basically walked out of the studio and said, I'm done, I've reached my peak kind of thing. And then they got Jason Soul, the Soul Man. He took over National Nights when I was there. And I guess for one reason or another, it didn't work. No one's asking for my opinion, but I mean, I can tell you why it didn't work, but that's not a question you're asking. And then Kyle came in and Kyle got his crack. And early on to be there, it was really... it was very interesting because, Kyle wasn't Kyle. He was absolutely finding his feet with regards to, a night show in a big market. And
I do recall that Jackie used to say when he did start, he said, you had no idea what you were doing, Kyle.
No, and honestly, one of his first shows, I remember, imagine if you heard this today. He started out of nowhere doing a Kermit the Frog impersonation. Can you imagine if you turned on Kiss in Sydney, you're waking up, you're getting out of bed, you're hopping in the shower, and Kyle goes into a Kermit the Frog. That's topical, Kyle, very topical for the audience.
Yeah.
That's the thing. He was given, this is the thing about radio, and I always say this, I don't think it's the same today as it was then, but, he had the people around him, whether it was your Jeff Ellis's or your Brian Ford's or whoever it was, that just... let him be, just let him try, experiment, grow, and become who he became. Because, of course, then they went to Drive and then from Drive to Breakfast. But that took time. And that's the thing. Where are the programmers these days that are allowing talent to, to really to try things, to push the boundaries, to fail? And I guess this is where a lot of them chime in and go, oh, well, there is. But and to that I just say, bull. It's not because I was there. I was doing late nights playing basically a strip game with a woman in a payphone.
Oh, my God, I remember those days because I grew up and I tuned in a few times when you were doing Mid-Dawns and that on Today FM, and I remember one idea I stole from your show was ring up and you can win me having a shower at your place. How did that come about?
Well, it didn't come about. It was not approved. It was not spoken about. Yeah. If I had a dollar for every morning I had to go to Jamie Angel's office after I got off a mid-dawn shift for him to say, look, Iran, they've told me to tell you. Jamie's great. He used to say, look, they've told me to say this is probably a bit out there, but from my point of view, all I really want to say is great work. Yeah. Like that was our conversation.
Yeah.
I had... Some girl had a girl who wanted to come into the studio to say hello, and then I think we broadcast live her pashing me, and then she bit my tongue and I screamed or something. there was a regular woman who used to call in from her house, and we'd play a game. We'd play games with letters, and you have to come up with words for letters, and if she got it wrong, she'd take something off. It's ridiculous looking back on it now, but my whole mindset, and when I used to speak with Jeff Ellis, he used to say, look, Orion, if we don't get complaints about you today, you haven't done your job. That was the mindset I was operating under.
Yes.
So my idea was get on the air and just go with what happens. Just, it's not just, I mean, music is super important for radio stations back then. And I guess it is kind of these days, if you're really lazy. But for most people, if you want to listen to the music you like, you don't need a radio station. But it still has its place. I'm not saying it doesn't. But back then, there was no streaming. You know, music was, for me, I used the music as a form of building momentum. So I'd start something and then, you know, hey, bang, here's music. And then bang, I'd continue it. And then music and then bang, there's kind of the end result of the arc that I'd done. Do you know what I mean? So it would push it forward. So it would create this momentum. And that's how I used it, where I guess now when you can listen to radio and all you can hear is three separate things, like announcer talking, which is really 99% just selling something, music playing, and ads.
Yeah.
They're three separate things. I finished talking now and telling you about that show. And now this is a song.
Yeah.
And you know, that's it. Where for me, I always tried to use it as a wave. I tried to surf into the song as a wave and build the momentum and keep going. Never let it stop.
It's that really compelling listening that makes you want to keep listening and keep people hooked. And sounds like that's exactly what you're trying to achieve there.
And that's really all I did. And that's why from Sydney, when I went to Perth, and I went from, you know, as you said yourself, late nights and dawns and all that kind of stuff, which, by the way, was the best time of my life. I mean, I'm so sad for young up-and-coming radio people. Given it's so cheap to pay a young up-and-coming person to work, you know, full-time or part-time doing dawns, and it creates an environment to learn, I just don't get the financial thing there. I mean, seriously, it's not like we're paying them a breakfast rate, for goodness sakes, you know. Like, and I did it for bugger all money. I didn't even... Honestly, I didn't even ask. I didn't even know what I was making. I didn't care. Yeah. I was on Today FM from 1 a.m. till 6 a.m. Yeah. I don't care what you're paying me. Just pay me. I don't care. I just want to do this. So when I went to Sydney, I was basically, it was one of those jobs where you got because of banging down the door. I was, as you said, I was the guy you'd turn on and you wouldn't really know what was going to happen next. And I tried a lot of out there things. I mean, you know, Labby used to call me late. I go, oh man, that was amazing, that break. I can't believe he did that. You know, like the Hot 30 guys would kind of listen in, and I got to do it in Perth, doing the Hot 30 in Perth. And for me, you know, probably the best 6 years of my radio life, because it was a time when I was legitimately allowed to really not only push the boundaries, but to try and provide something that was really different. And I think from doing it, I hope it inspired a lot of people that who didn't think maybe radio was their thing because they were a bit too quirky, or they were just a bit like for example, Lowy's Hot 30, right? That was completely, when that came out, that was like a Japanese game show. It was nuts.
It was
like a Japanese game show. And the guy was a genius. And I used to talk, and you know, I never even met him, and then he knew my name already. So he grew up and he heard the kind of stuff that I did. And it was a bit like, well, you're not supposed to do that on the radio. Like for example, you know, one of the breaks in Sydney, I think the break into the breakfast show, I think I said something like, you know, the morning crew on Today FM and Next, if they haven't died of old age. that was into the break.
Yeah.
And I do remember one time I said something into the show, Wendy Harmer on the air came into my studio and started yelling at me to the point where I left the mics on and said, Mum, I've made it. Wendy Harmer's yelling at me. And then she starts laughing and smiling. And then she goes, and then, you know, cut to Paul Holmes and Michael Sidney O'Neill keeping me in a pub till 5 minutes before my shift, trying to get me drunk just to, you know, have a fun with me. But I mean, this is Sydney.
Yeah.
And in Perth, I think in Perth, I was primed. Like I'd done the act. I'd refined what I wanted to do for so long and kind of off Broadway that when I finally, not that Perth is Broadway, but when I finally got to do it, I was just so, I was just so ready. And that's why I think probably my favorite stunts, and I don't know if we still call them that or we still really probably do them, but for me, I probably try to do at least a stunt a week, if not fortnightly. And I mean, like, I was arrested on the air once. We organized that, so it was the day I was going on my planned holidays. But of course, we didn't tell anyone. And when I say anyone, I mean my co-hosts, my producer, I mean like the staff. We didn't tell anyone. So that when I got arrested, the police came in, they handcuffed me, they put me in a divvy van, and they drove me home so I could get packing for my holiday. Yeah. Now the thing, but the thing was, I didn't tell anyone.
No.
And I played the act all the way, and I left the mics on, and I left the on-air Hot 30 on the air with mics on with a co-host and a producer, neither of which knew how to panel. It was gold. Now people would think, why would you do that? What do you mean? Listen, what do you mean? Why would I do that? This is the stuff that people, you know, connect with and talk with. And what we have to remember is, if you can get people to connect to one person doing one thing, they're not connecting to the one person. They're connecting to the station.
Yeah.
See, it reflects, and there's it's like throwing a rock, you know, into water. It creates a ripple effect. They go, wow, that's a cool station. You know, they don't even have to remember my name. So I think these are the stunts that I don't really know if they happen anymore. I think nighttime shows are kind of dead, aren't they? Like the whole idea of a almost like a primetime breakfast show for kids, that kind of countdown from 7 till 10. I think it's kind of dead, and in a way it's kind of become almost a caricature of what it used to be, where for me, I try to make it completely and absolutely unpredictable. And, you know, that's why I would constantly be working with people. Like the content director at one point was David Reimer, and, you know, he's had his fair share of stunts. Some have gone bad. And I can tell you, we came up with a great one. And I basically just, the point was, I recorded the conversation on a dictaphone with him telling me, if I don't lift my game, I'm not coming back from holidays. And I put that on the radio. I played that on the radio like it was a secret recording. And then he called in and he said, you know, I can't believe you've done that. My office tomorrow morning, blah, 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 blah. And then I wasn't on the air the next day because, I was going away or something. And these are the, and, you know, I got dumped on the air once. I got my real girlfriend to call up live on an OB. I was in a lounge room with teenage girls doing a show on a Friday night, and she dumped me on the air. So, you know, these kind of things, I lived for them. I didn't live for, hey, what's the number one song going to be, guys? Let's, you know, like, who cares? You'll hear it. It comes after two. So, you know, yeah. It was about just coming up with ways where I could get people enjoying what they were listening to. And my goal was, no one listens to radio at nighttime. And bugger all, why would you bother? There's TV, there's Netflix, there's your family, there's your friends, there's your life. So I need to get people who do not want to listen and get them in a mindset where they cannot leave the car.
Yeah.
I've been stuck in the car for 30 minutes. I went out to get milk. I can't turn this guy off. This is what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Because what happens when they turn the car off, right? Guess what happens when they get in the car the next morning to drive to work? Oh, hang on a second. What's the radio on? It's on the radio station they couldn't turn off the night before.
Yeah.
This is the ripple effect.
Yes, definitely. It really has that effect. If, you know, you've made such a big impression, they want to keep listening to more and more and more, and then bam.
100%.
It's in their mind, isn't it?
100%. It's a relationship.
Oh, totally, totally. You got to have that rapport. You got to have that, I don't know what he's going to say next effect on them, don't you?
And that's all. And, you know, the thing is too, and we've talked about this privately, you know, the kind of that kind of Howard Stern mentality, that kind of, I just like to be open and honest, and you don't know what I'm going to say or do next, and I don't really understand rules. You know, as we've talked about, you know, privately off air, off podcasts, that isn't an act. That's because I'm autistic. I mean, the creative secret to my kind of personality or to my success, if that's what you want to call it, is who I am. I actually have a different brain. My brain is wired differently, and therefore the way I read people, the way I, you know, understand situations, the way I navigate rules and relationships is different. And therefore it comes across in a way where it's unique, because not because I'm trying, but because I actually am properly different. I'm autistic. So, you know, I honestly, I think I would be, you wouldn't be talking to me right now if I wasn't autistic. I don't know. Maybe I'd be an accountant, a cameraman. I don't know. I mean, it's literally the creative differences that my brain's given me. I think one has given me everything that I've achieved, and two, sadly, has probably sabotaged my best possible career in radio, because autistic people don't mix. It's a fact. It's just, that's just the way it is.
At what age did you discover you had autism?
So it wasn't until pretty much adulthood. It was really actually a long time, mate. When you think about it, I'd pretty much completed my long run of radio prior to, I think regular people like to say they're taking a break to travel the world and spend time with family. For those listening, that's bull crap. What they're actually saying is they've either been fired, retrenched, or they're burnt out. Now, I was both.
Yep.
I was burnt out to the crap in Perth, and I was retrenched. And if you want to know why I was retrenched, I'm happy to tell you. Three words, Hamish and Andy, a new show that was a local Melbourne show. They thought, let's do this nationally on Drive. I was doing Drive at the time. And can I say that is the best decision they ever made? What idiot would say, oh man, they shouldn't have done that. They screwed me. No, they didn't. They got one of the greatest shows of all time, and they put them national, and I was burnt out. They said, hey, here's a whopping big check, a retrenchment check. I was tired anyway. I went home, traveled the world, had a break, and then went again. Like, this is the thing about the new age radio people, mate, you're part of it. We've all experienced retrenchment. We've all experienced radio changing. But for the life of me, I can't see why people take it so personally or become so mean-spirited to the people that did it to them. Because number one, I totally get the effects it has on you. No duh, I went through it. But the point is that if you choose to be a doctor, then you know you're putting yourself in harm's way of contracting COVID-19 and dying and never seeing your family again because you chose to be a doctor, right? And as the public, we go, whatever doctor, whatever man, you make crap loads of money. If you're going to get sick, I don't care. Just fix me. Like, we have that mentality. Well, it's no different to people in the entertainment industry. You've chosen to be in an industry that is based on performance, that is based on the frivolous nature of the attention of people who have multitudes of ways of connecting and getting entertainment. It's just business. It's just part of life. It's horrible, but you shouldn't look at it like a bad. I looked at it like a great thing. Hey man, number one, I'm the guy making way for the biggest, what's going to be the biggest show ever. Because I was working with those guys way before they went national. They were doing a Saturday morning show and it only went to Perth. It was in Melbourne and it started off only going to Perth. So I was paneling it and talking to, you know, Sam, the producer, and blah, blah, blah. So these guys, I knew these guys were great. So I'm making way for a great show. That's a win. I'm burnt out. They're giving me some money. That's a win. I can go on holidays and pay off some bills and have some fun and then go again. And that's what I did. Yeah. So you have to, I mean, I get it, but you have to look at things from, you know, what are you going to get out of this? And how is this going to help you become better, not only as a person, but at what you want to do? Because, you know, no one should be standing in your way, but I feel like a lot of people stand in their own way. So I think that kind of, yeah, I get a bit frustrated by that. And I understand, you know, you've been through this recently and I understand there was a heap of breakfast shows and I understand that's a really raw, emotional, a horrible situation. But you know what? I've been there too. I've done breakfast radio in Charleville. Who even knows where, do you even know where Charleville is? I was in two buses for 37 hours from Melbourne to Charleville. How old was I? 17.
Wow.
This is my job. My first job in radio. Thanks, Phil, for getting me a job in Outback Queensland, you bastard. I was breakfast, right? I did the breakfast show. I was the station copywriter, but I was also the station voiceover and producer. So I'd write the ads, then I'd voice them, then I'd produce them. This is after the breakfast show. Plus, back then, you had to be the music director of your own shift and you had to play a combination of music. So I would be playing carts, CDs, and vinyl, right? Now, I mean every every song would be something different. I'd go from a CD to a cart to vinyl, everything. I produced everything. Everything was done by, no one did anything for me. Everything. I mean, openers, stings, everything. So this is my first job. And I'm in the middle of nowhere getting paid absolutely not enough money. A couple of times I remember I got, like, there was some, you know, locals that like to get drunk and beat up on people. They beat me up on my front doorstep a couple of times. I mean, this is just living in outback Queensland. This
wow.
Is just, but it does, I don't look at it badly. It was one of the experiences of my lifetime. And I think we have to remember that if you want to be in this industry, then you've actually, what I've just said is what you've got to do.
Yeah.
You have to want to be in this industry. And it's just like a partner. If you want a partner, you have to want a partner for all the things that comes with it, right? And what comes with things are good and bad. So I really hope the people that had a bad year with regards to employment, I really hope, number one, they're okay. I hope that if they're not okay, they're getting some sort of help or some sort of support. And number three, I really hope they can find it inside themselves to rise again. You know, I don't want to get all dark night on you, but you either rise again or you curl up and die in a little cave. Rise again, my friends. You can do this. There is a zillion ways to communicate with the world if no one else is going to pay you to do it in the interim. I mean, you know, I've got a YouTube channel. I do podcasts. You can communicate.
I was just about to link to that.
Yeah. I mean, you can do, there's a plethora of ways to reach the world.
Your podcast is interviewing people and talking about autism, which is fascinating because so many people have a misconception about what it is all about, but you really break it down in layman's terms so everyday people get it.
Yeah, and look, the thing is, like all disabilities, because the truth is autism is a neurological developmental disability. So it's not an intellectual disability, it's a developmental disability. So, you know, I'm on the NDIS, right? I have a qualified diagnosed disability. Okay, so like all disabilities, why would anyone expect anyone else to know everything about every disability that they don't have? Yeah. I think that's just, it's fanciful, right? Yeah. So my goal isn't to berate you. How dare you don't know that I'm autistic, and how dare you don't treat me the way I should be treated? My goal is to, I guess, to use humor and my own personality to try and talk about different topics that can reach not only autistic people to validate them, because I get that a lot. You know, I validate their experiences, but also to reach people who we like to call neurotypical. So people who aren't autistic and obviously don't have an intellectual disability, neurotypical people, you know, reach them and give them some sort of level of understanding. And that's also why I started the YouTube channel, because I do a podcast that's got nothing to do with autism, the intensely inquisitive, but the My Friend Autism and the YouTube channel are basically exclusively autistic content. So yeah. For me, again, what I'm trying to do is it's like I'm on the radio. I'm trying to entertain. I'm trying to engage. You know, I'm trying to inform in a way that isn't like preachy, and I'm just trying to reach people. And I think that's the only way I can really go about doing anything with regards to communication. I think, like, I listened to some announcers on mainstream capital city stations, and let's put aside the classic rock ones, which tend to have some really talented, experienced announcers. I mean, the Golds and the Triple M's. I mean, you know, they have just, you know, Phil O'Neill and Gavin Miller and all they are just legends, right? But I'm talking about your more younger mainstream stations. The jocks, the announcers, whatever you want to call them, I don't even know who they're trying to reach. Like, I don't even know what they're trying to say. I don't know who they are. I don't know what they stand for. It's kind of, they seem a bit like, you know, the Hawthorn Football Club mentality: lose a soldier, replace a soldier.
Yeah.
You know, same.
Yeah.
I just don't get it. So for me, it doesn't matter if I'm doing a podcast, a YouTube video, a weekend shift on 3GG, you know, a radio show somewhere else, whatever. I think that nothing ever changes. You just have to try and communicate, engage, and connect. And that's why sometimes I can come across a little manic, because I come across a little manic or a little passionate, because, well, number one, it's my brain's different. And number two, have you ever connected with someone who's like,
yeah, so then I yeah, then I did this and, you know, then I did that.
I mean, you're not. You're not going to. It's not. You're not going to connect to someone like that. So I think it's super important. I don't hear it much. I just don't know why they think they have to. Oh, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say, Bevo. I just, yeah, it troubles me. It troubles me that it's such a, and also too, you know, for some reason you have to be like, I don't know, in your 20s and you have to be like a vanilla person in their 20s who just sounds like everyone else and is willing to provide no connection at all and just sell something in 15 seconds. And it's like, okay, cool. And if it's, by the way, if that's so successful, by the way, you tell me why aren't every one of those stations, and I'm not going to pick on a station in Sydney, why aren't every one of those stations at number one then? Well, they're not,
yeah.
Right? And guess who's getting number one in most markets now? It's your golds. It's your, you know, do you know what I mean? It's the gold format. Yep. It's the more experienced announcers, you know, who take the time to entertain, engage, and connect. And you tell me you don't know the difference between Phil O'Neill and Gavin Miller. You tell me you don't know the difference. What a load of, I mean, you do, but do you know the difference between every announcer on, you know, on Nova or on Fox or whatever? No, not really. I mean, seriously, I get at a loss. And that's why I did that episode on my podcast about the future of radio. I just felt so passionate about it because, man, I love radio more than I love pretty much anything. I'm just so at a loss.
No, I totally get what you're saying. Talking about personality radio, those days are gone, it just seems.
But that makes no sense though, Bevo.
Yeah.
Personality radio, those days are gone. You're right, but it makes no sense because there's so many platforms to provide people with things that isn't talking, right? Or personality. I mean, people can listen to podcasts, people can watch YouTube, people can listen to their favorite music on streaming services. So, you know, what does radio stand for? I mean, it's commercial radio, which the first word is commercial, right? Yep. So it means it's a business, it's there to make money and provide advertising, which I think is fantastic. I mean, it's a great model, but what does it stand for? If it doesn't stand for allowing a daytime jock to talk for, you know, 30 seconds longer to do a bit that has no relevance to the station, but is bloody funny or entertaining or connects to the audience on an emotional level. If that is, and you know, this is when the CDs come in and go, oh, I'll let Pete do that. Yeah. How many times? Oh yeah. Once, 2 years ago. I mean, you know, seriously, you know, then what does it stand for? I mean, it's, oh, okay, cool. So you're like the streaming service, but you have someone interrupting my favourite songs and playing ads. Oh, that's what you stand for, is it? Oh, okay, cool. Out.
Orion, thank you so much for joining us on the Radio Fanboy podcast. What an insightful view into your passion. Like,
I'm
wow.
Just getting started, mate. Oh, just getting started.
All right, we'll have part two and part three coming up next week.
The Radio Fanboy podcast, hosted by Bevo and produced by Matt Fulton Productions. Dan Hill speaking.